debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Donald Trump is changing things, it seems. It's very interesting. Twice today. Now he's having dinner tonight with Paul Ryan at the White House. And that's going to be interesting. I think that the Republicans have figured out that all this language about Donald Trump basically going with whatever the last person he talked to said is probably true. But the guy's got an attention span that doesn't last more than 24 hours. And therefore, it's really important to get in his face a couple times a week if you want to have any control over the kinds of stuff he's going to do and say. But apparently, Paul Ryan was late coming to that party, late coming to that realization, late in figuring that out. Because Nancy and Chuck got there first yesterday. It's fascinating. I got a note from old friend Jim Turr. He Blue Canyon Productions in New Mexico. His website is jimturr.com. And Jim does some just amazing music. In fact, actually, he sent us a little song, a 1 minute long song about time to replace George Washington on the dollar bill with Donald Trump. It's a satire. In fact, here it is. Here, this is Jim Turr.
Let's put Donald on the one instead of Washington. It's likely to annoy him, but we can all enjoy him when purchasing some gum or a miniature from. It'll be a lot of fun to have Donald on the one. Yeah. I'd love to see that smile every once in a while. Even when he's gone back to wherever he came from, when purchasing some cheese in minute quantities, a reminder of when he made America great again. Yes, Washington had his day. Let's put someone new on display. Let's put Donald on the one. It'll be a lot of fun. That handsome face of his.
Okay, so anyway, that's Jim Turr's stuff. So Jim sends me a note. He says, I keep thinking that if Trump ever talks to a couple of really smart folks like Schumer about anything after what he's been through, it might start to affect his perverted thinking in a positive direction. You know what I mean? I mean, wouldn't it just be peachy if essentially he turned into a Democrat again? We know he loves to shock and surprise more than anything. And then Jim includes this clip from Air Force One yesterday when Trump flew up to North Dakota. We had a very good meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. We agreed to a 3-month extension on the debt ceiling, which they consider to be sacred, very important. Always will agree on debt ceiling automatically because of the importance of it, says Trump. So apparently, here's what happened. And, you know, we get this from multiple reports, and nobody's coming right out and saying it bluntly. And I'm going to do that. Now, there's a small chance that I'm wrong. But I don't think so. I mean, from everything I've read, everything I've seen, the photos I've seen, everything, you know, I wasn't in the room. I wasn't sitting there in the Oval Office with these guys. But basically, Trump calls together Pelosi and Schumer and Reid and Ryan, right? The two Democratic leaders of the House and Senate and the two Republican leaders of the Senate and the House. And says, okay, you know, let's get something done here. What are we going to do? We've got to pay for the hurricane damage in Texas. We got to get this done right away. People are hurting. You know, we're all good socialists today. So we've got to pay for that. We've got this debt ceiling stupidity coming, a law that Republicans passed back in the 1950s. It was completely ignored until the Nixon administration. But it was back at the height of this was when the national debt was less than a half a trillion dollars, less than $500 billion. And still there were Republicans hysterical about it. Because of course, even back in the 1950s, there were bankers who wanted all that money that is being saved by buying treasury bills, by being loaned to the US government. Except it's not even really a loan, by being put on deposit with the U.S. government, just like you can put money on deposit with a bank and you can get a reliable return on your investment in the form of interest. Now, right now, if you put your money with a bank, it's only guaranteed up to $250,000. You put your money with treasuries and it's guaranteed to anything. It's backed by the full faith and confidence of the United States, something that, according to the 14th Amendment, shall not be questioned. All the Republicans are certainly doing a good job of it. But in any case, I digress. The Republicans, you know, Trump gets them together in the Oval Office and says, okay, what are we going to do about this? Now, Ryan had a press conference that morning in which he said, no way, we're going to go with a short-term raising of the debt ceiling. We're going to do it for at least a year and a half. Now, why would he say that? Because he wants to get it past the next election. He does not want the Republicans. See, the Republicans use this debt ceiling thing exactly for the purpose that, you know, craven Republicans put it into place in the first place back in the 1950s. They use this thing. It's not even, you know, can the government borrow more money? It's will the government pay the bills it's already committed to, which is stupid. It's like you and your family having a debate about whether to pay the credit card when you have the means to pay it. So, you know, but this is our stupid national debate every year, thanks to the Republicans. So Paul Ryan was saying, no, it's got to go past the next election, because this is not only the weapon that we use against Democrats, but it's also a weapon Democrats can use against us when we're in the majority. We can use it against the Democrats when we're in the minority. And so Ryan and McConnell were absolutely no way, no 3-month extension of the debt ceiling, because that means that 3 months from now, and this is October, November, December, you know, January, well, October, November, December, anyway, sometime in December, we're going to have another debate about this. And Christmas is coming, and it's going to be hard to get people really cranked up unless the economy's in the tank or we're at war or something like that. Even then, this is going to. So, you know, basically, if the president went along with a 3-month extension of keeping the government open, then it has to be revisited in 3 months again, and that hurts the Republicans. So Trump says, okay, we need an extension. And Ryan says, how about 18 months? And Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi, one of them, say, no, we'll go with 3 months. So McConnell says, well, how about 6 months? Let's get it passed. I mean, there's a couple of elections at the end of this year, November of this year. Let's just get it passed, all of that stuff, and put it next spring. And Schumer and Pelosi say, no, 3 months. And Trump is in just total deal-making mode. He doesn't really, frankly, care about the Republicans' little squabbles and who's got the power and who doesn't and all this kind of thing. In fact, I think he's getting sick and tired of the Republicans, which is a good thing for our country, arguably. So Trump says, okay, I like what Nancy and Chuck said. We're going to go with that. At which point, you know, Ryan and McConnell are like, what? What did he just do? Really? So real quickly, Paul Ryan organized dinner tonight at the White House, I would submit to you. So is this the beginning of something really new? Now, who knows? And Paul Ryan tonight at dinner is going to do everything he can to put the absolute kibosh on this. But consider who Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is a sociopathic narcissist whose bucket is not only empty, but it has a hole in the bottom of it, his emotional bucket. Everybody he encounters, he asks, please put some love in this bucket. Please tell me I'm okay. Please, you know, give me some attention and affection. Give me some recognition. Literally every circumstance, every situation, every person, that's Donald Trump. He doesn't care about what's best for the country. He doesn't care about world peace unless it gets him kudos. He doesn't care about, you know, the national debt or no national debt. He doesn't care about any particular legislation. He does care about his taxes. He would like to no longer pay the alternative minimum tax. It's cost him $25 million a year, even when he pays no other taxes whatsoever, federal income taxes. He wants to get rid of that alternative minimum tax. The Republicans are down with that, so he's going along with them. But basically, this is a guy who has no philosophical core. And for years and years, he was a Democrat. And he knows Chuck Schumer quite well. Chuck Schumer represents New York, where Donald Trump is from. So is it possible? Now, here you've got a guy who's president of the United States who campaigned on, I'm not going to touch. He said every Republican up here on this stage during the primaries, he said every Republican up here on this stage wants to cut your Social Security, your Medicare, and your Medicaid. I am not going to cut any of them. And then Mick Mulvaney, former Tea Party Coke toady, now, you know, the head of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick says, oh, but Social Security disability insurance, Mr. President, that's not actually Social Security. That's actually welfare. And Trump says, OK, go ahead and cut it. So they cut Social Security in his budget. And then somebody else says to him, oh, you know, Medicaid, that's welfare. The states can choose to do that or not. The Supreme Court said, you know, Alito said so. And Trump's like, oh, OK, well, you can cut that, too. That's welfare. They're not welfare. So you've got Trump being played, being made a fool of by Mick Mulvaney and by the Republicans around him. And I think, frankly, he's probably reaching the point where he's sick and tired of it. So he campaigned on, I'm not going to touch your entitlements. Maybe he will join with the Democrats and not touch the entitlements. He campaigned on, I'm going to stop the banksters on Wall Street. The Republicans want to empower the banksters. They want to do it with Dodd-Frank. Is he going to fight his own party and keep his campaign promises now? See, the only way, you know, so many of these things that Trump campaigned on, he was going to blow up the free trade deals. The Republicans love the free trade deals. They're great for big corporations. Lousy for workers. Democrats hate the free trade deals. Every single free trade deal, all the way back to the 1970s, has been fought by Democrats in Congress. Every single one. Yes, I know two Democratic presidents, Obama and Clinton, were in favor of free trade deals. They were fighting their own party. So is Trump going to turn into a Democrat? Just in order to get something done, because all he cares about is getting credit? Now he's getting credit. Hey, we move things forward. This could get real weird, but real interesting.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a very strange time in America. And of course, there's this giant hurricane coming for Florida. If you're in Florida, get the hell out of the state. And welcome back. Well, that's interesting. We have no free speech TV callers, so I can just go off on a rant, which is always fun. See, if you call during that first segment, you generally get on during this break. Anyhow, The Washington Post, this is Dana Milbank. And Desiree Ferruz has been on this program. She was on our show, about 2 months ago, I think. She was the woman who was during Jeff Sessions' confirmation hearings before the United States Senate. Jeff Sessions lied at least once, and many are asserting two or three times, to Congress during those confirmation hearings. The last time Sessions had confirmation hearings, to the best of my knowledge, was back in the late 70s, early 80s, when he was proposed to be a federal judge. And his own Republican colleagues would not confirm him because of his racist past. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. Yes. So at his confirmation hearings, Jeff Sessions is testifying, and somebody asks him the question. Let's see here. I've got the actual question. He said, where to go? Oh, maybe I don't have the question. Anyhow, he was asked the question about, here it is. Mr. Sessions, would you treat all Americans equally under the law? And when that question was asked of Sessions, Desiree Ferruz, who was standing at the back of the room, started laughing. Not, disruptively, just laughing. I would have laughed too. I mean, are you kidding? Jeff Sessions treating all persons equal under the law? Are you kidding? So what did they do? They arrested her and hauled her out. And Jeff Sessions has apparently directed his Justice Department to prosecute Desiree Ferruz for laughing at him. And she was prosecuted, and she was convicted of laughing at him. But actually, it turns out, when she was convicted of trying to resist the police officer who was dragging her out of the room. So that's what she was convicted of. But she had only been charged with laughing at Jeff Sessions, with disruption. So an appeals court judge threw out the conviction, said, this is nonsense. So Sessions' Department of Justice comes back and says, this woman's just a local activist, right? I mean, she's not like, the scion of some multi-billion-dollar family or something. It's not like she's got lawyers on retainer. This is really tough stuff to go up against the U.S. Justice Department. You got to have lawyers. You got to have money. And they're going after her again. And they're going to put her on trial a second time. Dana Milbank editorializing about this in yesterday's Washington Post. The headline, apparently it's illegal to laugh at Jeff Sessions. Yeah, apparently it is. This is what happens in fascistic countries. If you're in Saudi Arabia, and you say, the king is not a good guy, they cut your head off. Well, Saudi Arabia is the country that Trump loved. Coming here now. Fantasy football fans, the wait is nearly over. Football is back, which means FanDuel is back. FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans. They have new contests starting every week, so there's no busted seasons. FanDuel has something for everyone. Lots of contests to choose from, starting at just $1. Just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. Hey, would you like to have Colin Kaepernick on your team? He's on mine. There's a lot of ways to put together and personalize your team, and boy, the games just get better and better. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my code TOM, T-H-O-M. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com and sign up with promo code TOM, T-H-O-M. That's FanDuel, FanDuel.com, promo code TOM. Void where prohibited. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So, Trump, we had a very good meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. We agreed to a 3-month extension on the debt ceiling, which they consider to be sacred, very important. always will agree on debt ceiling automatically because of the importance of it. And in the midst of this, Steve Mnuchin, who was in the room, had been in the middle of this whole long explanation about we need a longer extension of the debt ceiling because that will provide safety and security to financial markets, which is the BS excuse that these guys trot out all the time. It's just a total, it's like, okay, if you want to give the financial markets safety and security, raise the debt ceiling for a year. Raise the debt ceiling for 5 years. End the debt ceiling. There's no reason for it. There is literally no reason for Congress every year to have to pass legislation saying, yeah, we can spend more money. Because Congress already has the authority to spend the money. It's like writing a law that says for yourself, that says that you may only pay your bills when you and your spouse sit down and have a meeting and decide that we're going to pay our bills. And if either one of you says, no, I don't want to pay the bills today, then the bills don't get paid. Completely ignoring the fact that, you know, there's a bill for those bills. So some of the things that Trump ran on, Trump ran on a policy, again, largely a Democratic Party policy, of no more stupid wars. It was Democrats who opposed George W. Bush's stupid wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, I get it that, you know, particularly with Afghanistan, most Democrats voted for it. Barbara Lee, God bless her, and, stood up. And history has recorded that well. But Trump, you know, ran on this platform. He basically, and I kept saying this during the Republican primary, when I was predicting that Trump was going to win the Republican primary, I was saying the reason why is because the vast majority of Americans are actually Democrats, or they actually side, they're actually progressive or weakly progressive. Moderate progressives are actual progressives, the vast majority of Americans. I mean, any survey, look at any survey. The majority of Americans think that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid should be solid and strong. The majority of Americans think everybody should be covered with health insurance. The majority of Americans want everyone to have a free college education. The majority of Americans think nobody should have student debt. The majority of Americans believe nobody should be wiped out by getting sick. The majority of Americans think that the government should be the employer of last resort. The majority of Americans support the extension of long-term uninsurance or unemployment benefits. I mean, it just goes on and on. The list of things, the majority of Americans support the rights of gay people. The majority of Americans support the right of women to do what they choose with their own bodies. The majority of Americans support the separation of church and state. The majority of Americans think taxes should be raised on billionaires and lowered on working people. The majority of Americans think our war on drugs is stupid. The majority of Americans think the Citizens United is wrong and that billionaires and big corporations should not be able to own politicians. The majority of Americans think that we should have massive spending for infrastructure, even if it means borrowing the money, because we'll make it back, you know, in the added economic activities. The majority of Americans think public schools should be strengthened. The majority of Americans think that privatized prisons are a bad idea. The majority of Americans think that, you know, that voting integrity should be at the top of the list, and that voting machines that are privately owned by Republican-leaning corporations should be thrown out. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow, the AAAS, the American Academy for the Advancement of Science, has this article, Russian Scientists Deny Climate Model of IPCC. Basically, they're looking at the Arctic, the Russian Arctic, where there are trillions of tons of methane frozen in the permafrost. And they're saying that the IPCC estimates of how rapidly this stuff is going to melt and throw CH4, methane, into the atmosphere, which is a massively powerful greenhouse gas, that these estimates are way too conservative, way too cautious, and that things are melting much, much faster than we thought. That is not reassuring. Anyhow,
I just the whole, you know, for this hour, there's a whole bunch of other news that I want to get into in the next hour and the hour after that. But for this hour, I want to talk about this possibility that there might be an opening here for Democrats to basically split the Republican Party in half using Donald Trump. And that it would work to the benefit of Donald Trump. So, Donald, if you're listening, keep doing this. You know, the Republicans are not your friend. You've got Mick Mulvaney, who lied to you and told you that Social Security disability insurance was welfare. So you agreed to cut Social Security, thus hurting yourself with your base. You've got Paul Ryan, who lies to you about things like minimum wage, thus hurting your base. You got Mitch McConnell, who lies to you about, you know, why they're doing many of the things they're doing. They're, you know, reducing regulations. Why? So that we can increase pollution. Well, why would we want to increase pollution? It's going to cause people to die. Well, because it's more money for the Republican donor base. Well, Donald, you shouldn't have to worry about the Republican donor base. You got your own money, right? And you got a couple of rich friends. You got Robert Mercer and his daughter Rebecca, and you know, Shelley Adelson and a few others. So, you know, work with the Democrats and make some things happen for the best of the country rather than just the best of the oligarchs. Is it possible? It's exactly how he campaigned. And it's what the people that I know who voted for Trump are hoping and expecting. So let's see what happens. So far, the only part of his base that his advisors have let him stay in touch with has been the racist, foaming at the mouth white supremacists. But when Trump realizes that if he behaves like a Democratic president, if he out LBJ's LBJ, which he could do right now, he only needs, you know, 2-3 Republicans in the Senate and 20 or so Republicans in the House of Representatives to basically run roughshod over the entire Republican Party and actually get a lot of things done with his presidency. Or am I just being insanely naive? See, I think the fact that Donald Trump only cares about Donald Trump works to the benefit of whoever figures that out first. Obviously, on the international scene, the people who figured that out first were China and Saudi Arabia. And Japan. You know, Abe was just falling all over himself to suck up to Trump. And then Saudi Arabia put on a grand show for him. He'll never forget how much they love him over there. Wilbur Ross even came back and said, what, weren't even any protests? Well, of course not. If you protest in Saudi Arabia, they cut your head off. Wilbur Ross apparently didn't know that. You know, he's only worth $5 billion, and he's only a member of the president's cabinet as a commerce secretary. He doesn't mean that he has to know how things work in the world, right? Anyway, Maria in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Maria, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was really inspired yesterday when the call came in to you and you found out about Trump working with Senator Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. After that, I called all my representatives here in Illinois, which, thank God, are all Democratic, and I encouraged them to work with Trump whenever there's a window of opportunity because we have to move the country forward.
And not only that, it's not hurting the Democratic Party. It's no. Hurting the Republican Party.
Yeah. And I commended what they did. I even called Nancy Pelosi's office and Chuck Schumer's office, too, to commend them on what they'd done. And I want to say today I called the White House to commend President Trump for working across the aisle.
That's great. I mean, it's important to notice when people do good things as well as it is to you know, hopefully positively criticize them when they do bad things.
Right.
Excellent.
And I also added more things to the list when I was talking to the White House. I said if he could sign the DACA legislation that hopefully is going to come forward, and also health care, to relook at health care. And I told the operator that I'd heard that President Trump thinks that that it's health care is like life insurance, that it's only $12, $15 a month. Mm-hmm. And that he needs to know more about that to educate himself, that really it's very expensive for people and families of their income. And I also encourage him to work on building roads and bridges infrastructure, Roosevelt did, the WPA program.
Yeah, except that, you know, they want to do it in a way that is billionaire-friendly and America-unfriendly. But, you know, I don't think the Democrats will let him do that. And if he just, you know, the cost of borrowing is so low right now. And we know that for every dollar you invest in infrastructure, you get between $10 and $100 back in tax revenues over the life of that infrastructure, depending on if it's got a 20-year lifespan or a 100-year lifespan. And you know, this is common sense that could easily be sold, I would think, to Donald Trump. Maria, thank you for the call, and thanks for being so proactive out there. Great talking.
I called Bernie Sanders, and I asked him to educate President Trump about health care.
Yeah, he needs to. He really needs to have dinner with Trump. And I mean, there should be a we've got this neophyte in the White House. There should be a full court press to make something happen. Maria, hopefully you and I aren't just being hopelessly optimistic, but you know, we'll see where this goes. Maria, thank you for the call. Richard in Chicago. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for all your great work. I almost jumped out of my seat when you started to explain your thought about the deal that Trump made with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. I fully agreed. I told two people this morning when I walked into my office that was the driving force. And I think that the opportunity right now for the Democrats is exactly what you said. And if I were the head of the DNC or head of Senator or the House, I would say, look, we have an opportunity now. We know what the president's, you know, quote unquote, weaknesses and strengths. He likes to be loved, so I agree with you on that. And why don't we find the areas that we can show him the most love that are going to benefit the country and get those deals done that are a direct opposition to what Republicans want to get done?
Yep.
And that will then also translate into what the Democrats' message should be in the midterm elections, the next national election, and certainly some of the state elections that are going on throughout the country. Right here in Chicago, I mean, it's interesting that your three consecutive callers are all from, or within a 50-mile radius of each other here in Chicago, and we all are seeing it the same way. This is what the Democrats need to do right now, is gather that momentum with the message from the head of the DNC, Chuck,
or, you know, Chuck Schumer has a good relationship with Trump. He's the one who should be having dinner with him tonight. I'm not sure that, you know, that anybody else is going to do it as well. Richard, thank you for the call. Well
said. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
My friend Tom Hartman and company.
Hey, Randy, how you doing?
I had to call in because of your opening comment asking the question, is this a new day or a dawning of something? And I disagree. There's nothing new under the sun here. It is, he's setting himself up, taking care of business that needs to be taken care of, using that as a stepping stone to get to his new pet project, and that is tax reform and tax cuts of that $2 trillion that's laying overseas that the American taxpayer paid corporations to leave, and now all that profit was made at 33 1/3%, and they're going to give them a tax holiday or a tax cut, and the American worker is not going to get...
Yeah, they want to drop it to 5%. When Bush did that same thing, dropped it to 5%, virtually all of the money that came back to this country was used for share buybacks, which jacked up the price of the stock, helped out investors and helped out the CEOs and screwed everybody else.
Yep. So that's what I think. I believe that it's...
No, I agree with you, but he's going to have a hard time getting that past the Democrats. And if the Democrats could work with him and say, you know, here's how to do this in a way that's not so toxic. But I don't know. Disease is probably too strong a word, but one of the conditions that I suffer from, Randy, is that I'm an optimist. You know, I look at situations and I'll acknowledge the horror of situations. I've been in terrible situations. I've been in the middle of wars. I mean, I've been in just horrible places. But you know, the question I'm always asking myself is, how can we make this better? What can we do with this? How can we turn this lemon into a lemonade? I get how toxic Trump is, and I absolutely get how the Republicans around him, how toxic they are. But yesterday something happened that McConnell and Ryan were absolutely not expecting, absolutely not prepared for. Donald Trump stepped over a line that I don't think any president has stepped over in my lifetime, and that is to directly contradict the leadership of his own party and basically, you know, step on their whole legislative policy that was designed to trap the other party. He stepped on that. He crushed that and ruined their plans right in front of them, right in the presence of the Democratic leaders. And then on top of that, spoke well of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on Air Force One on the way to South Dakota yesterday. And then on top of that, this morning, Nancy Pelosi called up Donald Trump and said, you got 800,000 teenagers and people in their early 20s, young people in this country, who are scared to death. They're, you know, some of them are thinking about suicide. They're calling doctors to get, you know, prescriptions for anti-anxiety drugs. You need to help these kids stop freaking out. And so Trump this morning tweeted out, if you're a DACA person, relax. We're going to take care of it. We're going to take care of you. Everything's going to be fine. And yesterday he had said, you know, if the Republicans in Congress can't get this together, then I'll basically do what President Obama did and do it by executive order, which blows up his whole argument that the executive order is unconstitutional and illegal, by the way. It just lays bare what his real agenda is, which is anything that had Obama's name attached to it, he's going to try and destroy. But if it's a good idea, he's going to try and replace it with something that's got his name attached to it. I'm waiting to see him do the same thing with healthcare. But we'll see, Randy, we'll see. Randy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Hurricane Irma is on its way to Florida. It's already done considerable damage to people in a number of countries. The little island of Barbuda, I guess it is, or Barbuda. Yeah, it's like Bermuda without the R or something. Like that. But anyway, 1,200 people on the island. They you know, just 90% of their buildings destroyed. I mean, this is serious damage that has happened. Ah, thank you. And we're looking at dead, you know, people who are dead. I mean, over 50 people now in Texas, and there's more to come. And the question, I think, you know, really needs to be asked, who's going to pay for this? Who's responsible for this? There's not yet a consensus in the scientific community, but there are a number of scientists who are coming out and saying that probably, you know, I mean, we've had hurricanes in this part of the world forever, at least as long as humans have been around. But they haven't been this strong. We haven't had mile-wide tornadoes in Oklahoma until the last decade or two. We haven't had these, you know, these insanely strong storms. They are the clear consequence of the oceans being warmer and of the atmosphere being warmer and having more water vapor. This is the clear consequence of that. As air warms up, it holds more water. As water warms up, it evaporates more water. So you've got the oceans, which are warm, fueling the convection, the motion, the physical motion of air above them, which turns into hurricanes. And you've got warm water evaporating water moisture into the air more rapidly, which adds to the volume of water which falls when these hurricanes hit land, which was vividly on display with Hurricane Harvey in Houston. We see these things, right? This is not some mysterious process or something like that. It's right there in front of us, right there for us to look at. And if we don't start asking the question, where did this come from? How did this happen? You know, what's going on? Why is it that so many people are dying? Why is it that these storms are so severe? And the answer comes right down to a very, very simple thing. And that is that the fossil fuel industry, which is known for years that their products do this to us. ExxonMobil learned this back in the 70s. The first credible scientist to talk about carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas that could warm the planet was in 1880. This is not, you know, something that we just woke up to last week. And yet the fossil fuel industry has been actively sending money from their profits, from the poisons that they sell us and that they put into our atmosphere. They have been taking the profits from those poisons, and they have been using them to buy media, to buy public relations, to buy politicians, to send deceptive textbooks into schools, to hire climate deniers in colleges. They have used this to essentially create a situation that is killing us. 50 people are dead in Houston, and I'm guessing that there will probably be more as they start tearing apart some of these houses that have been literally underwater, where people who might have been trying to get to their roof and got as far as their attic got trapped and swamped, and or people who were on dialysis machines or iron lungs or, you know, whatever in their homes, people who couldn't move, or people who simply didn't have the means. They were not wealthy enough to own a car. Public transportation and shut down, the buses weren't running. What are they going to do? It's going to be more and more of this. Mark Hertisgaard has a piece over at The Nation titled "Climate Denialism is Literally Killing Us." And he starts with the story of Jordan Grace. Jordan Grace is this three-year-old child who survived the flood in Houston by clinging to the body of her dead mother. As her mother was dying, she was praying, you know, save me, save my baby. She died. Her baby survived. At least 60 people in Texas have died because of the storm. Over a million are displaced. And who knows, Mark writes, how many survived but lost everything. Keep in mind, by the way, flood insurance, you know, most flood insurance only pays around $30,000 in a full claim. I mean, you know, full payout. Even those people with flood insurance are going to be wiped out. And this has happened to Texas. It's now about to happen to Florida. Yes, we routinely have these kind of things happen in the United States, but not like this, not at this level, not with this level of severity. 16 million children in Nepal and India and Bangladesh right now are homeless, and many of them without food or water. Pretty soon the cholera epidemics begin, the famine begins, and we're going to hear reports of millions of people dying. Keep in mind, the global warming is global. It's not just here in North America. It's all over the planet. And it is killing people as we speak. It is creating climate refugees as we speak. It is fueling wars as we speak. The whole Syrian conflict is a result of climate change. A million farmers in the north of Syria lost their farms as the desert moved south over the last two decades and claimed, you know, thousands of square miles of fertile, arid land, turned it into desert. And what do those people do? Those million plus Syrian farmers, small family farmers, what do? They had to go to the big cities and become beggars, basically, or take whatever job they could get. And that then and then at the same time, because the farms were shutting down, they were not growing wheat, the price of wheat went up, and the government had been subsidizing wheat. They had been subsidizing food to their people. And the Assad government, and Assad said, you know, we can't afford this. And so he cut back the subsidies. Well, as soon as he cut back the subsidies, people said, hey, wait a minute. It's not my fault that I'm here. And they started protesting, and the first protests were met by Assad's soldier shooting people, which was his first big mistake, or arguably his second big mistake. The first was cutting off the price supports for food. And that led directly to a civil war in Syria. It all started with climate change. You've got this massive destruction now down here. In 2000, this is an amazing little coda here that Mark Hertisgaard adds to his article in The Nation. He says, in 2008, John Podesta, soon to be Obama's transition director, organized a war game to test the responses to projected climate disruptions. Now, this is really interesting. This was 2008. That's, 9 years ago. John Podesta is running a war game to test the ability of the United States to deal with climate change-fueled climate violence. They used the best science available to predict where this would happen and where it would be the most destructive. And they came up with Houston. And in order to put it in a larger context, they figured while Houston was flooding, India should also be flooding. You got millions of refugees in India, a million people displaced in Houston. This was in 2008. This was their war game against climate change. Guess what? Just came true. Harvey dumped 27 trillion gallons of water. Seth Borenstein of the AP says that's enough to cover Manhattan a mile deep. Where did all that water come from? It came from evaporation. A lot of it came from evaporation out of the Atlantic. Why so much water? Because the atmosphere can hold more water because of global warming, because the atmosphere is a degree warmer than it used to be, and because the ocean can evaporate much more moisture into the air than it used to because it's warmer. It's the Caribbean, the Gulf of Mexico, 7 degrees warmer than they used to be. Meanwhile, the head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, has done away with President Obama's Clean Power Plan. Oh, yeah, it's just fine. Dump all the poison into the atmosphere you want. It doesn't matter if we pollute the planet. As long as the billionaires in the oil industry are richer, everything is good. Trump rescinded Obama's requirement that federal agencies take climate impacts into account when they're building major infrastructure. Because, like, you know, hey, we don't need to be building bridges over rivers and calculate into how high the bridge should be, what the flood level of the river might be under these new climate change realities. Because we're pretending there's no such thing as climate change. You know, if Republicans really believe this stuff, if they really believe this crap, they should all go to South Florida right now. Because, you know, hey, climate science is a lie, right? It's these greedy scientists just coming up with stuff so that they can keep their jobs. So if climate science is a lie, don't believe what they're telling you about the weather. Oh, wait a minute. Rush Limbaugh already said that day before yesterday on his show. It's just a hype, right? This is just a hype. People are calling out Limbaugh right now saying, you know, really? You're going to get people killed. People are dying. Because of climate denialism. People are dying because these corporations, the politicians they own, and the right-wing media that they support and that has this bizarre symbiotic relationship with them are all committed to increasing the profits of ExxonMobil, Koch Industries, and the rest of the fossil fuel bunch. That's what's going on here. And as a result of this, people are dying. And then to really rub salt in the wounds, NASA, which collects the information on climate, NASA, which runs the satellites that are telling us, many of the satellites, not all of them, but they certainly put them there and get them back down again. NOAA runs some of them. But NASA is, you know, the big agency in charge of this stuff. Trump just appointed a guy to run NASA who's a climate denier and is not a scientist. He's just a right-wing hack. And Trump appointed him to run NASA. So, you know, it's time for us to start calling out these people. It's time to start calling out these institutions, to start calling out the TV and radio shows that are lying to us about climate change, to go to town halls and call out the politicians who are lying about us, to vote for people who acknowledge climate change, to promote legal investigations into company and sue companies. In fact, it's happening in 3 states now to ExxonMobil that have been lying to us. Fantasy football fans, the wait is nearly over. Football is back, which means FanDuel is back. FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans. They have new contests starting every week, so there's no busted seasons. FanDuel has something for everyone. Lots of contests to choose from, starting at just $1. Just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. Hey, would you like to have Colin Kaepernick on your team? He's on mine. There's a lot of ways to put together and personalize your team, and boy, the games just get better and better. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my code TOM, T-H-O-M. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com and sign up with promo code Tom, T-H-O-M. That's FanDuel, F-A-N-D-U-E-L.com, promo code Tom. Void where prohibited. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Nikki Haley gave a speech at the hard right organization, the American Enterprise Institute, AEI. I used to debate Myron E. Bell from AEI, as I recall, and a number of other people. They actually used to, both AEI and Heritage, used to be willing to send people to this program to debate me. It was their practice, right? Until I just, you know, it's like they couldn't do it anymore. It's just, anyway. Nikki Haley gave a speech at AEI, you know, this hard right group. And she said that the president, Trump, has the grounds, her word, has the grounds, to say that Iran is not keeping up with their part of the Iran nuclear deal that was negotiated with Britain and Germany and France and China and Russia and us. And, you know, it wasn't just us, and it wasn't just Obama, but Obama had something to do with it. So the trumpets are all hysterical. Oh, my God, you know, our black president did something. We got to get rid of it. We got to move it out. And she said that the reason why we can back out of this agreement, that we can declare them in noncompliance. See, the agreement requires that every month or every couple of months, every 90 days, every 3 months, the U.S. government, the president, actually, the executive branch, has to certify that Iran is in compliance with this deal. Trump has done this twice now. Twice. Iran is doing everything they agreed to. Now, they're also doing things that we don't like. They're still supporting Hezbollah. They're testing ballistic missiles. We don't like that. They're engaging in anti-American rhetoric. They're supporting rebels in Syria and in Lebanon. You know, we don't like this stuff. And so what Nikki Haley is saying is that if we don't like what they're doing, that means that we can declare them in violation of this treaty. Just because we don't like what they're doing. Right? I have a contract with Comcast to provide cable TV and internet service to my home. But they provide me with crappy service. I don't like it. So I can just call them up and say, you know I signed a 2-year agreement, but come get your box. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to say, fine, we'll get the box, and we're going to charge you $500 to penalize you for closing the agreement. You know, in other words, but I don't like your service. I don't like the way you behave. Doesn't matter. It's not what the agreement says. Now, obviously, if you want to send your cable box back to Comcast, that's not going to provoke a world war. Nikki Haley and Donald Trump saying that Iran is not in compliance with this deal that was negotiated between Iran and 5 other countries, that could lead to a world war. And a big one. These guys are absolutely playing with fire. The Washington Post put together one of the most spot-on opinion pieces. This is by the editorial board. This is not an individual writer at the Washington Post. This is all of the editors. And they have editors who are liberals, who are conservatives, who are none of the above, who, you know, politics is not their thing, whatever. This is the consensus of the editorial board at the Washington Post, from what little I know about how it works there. And they write, they talk about how Nikki Haley says that, you know, the president has the grounds to say that because of Hezbollah or the ballistic missile tests or hostility to the United States, Nikki Haley said, quote, "We must consider the whole jigsaw puzzle," she said, "not just one of its pieces." And then the op-ed says, she's wrong. And by the way, she is. "While Iran indeed is engaging in some very worrisome pursuits," writes the editorial board of the Washington Post, The deal is confined to the nuclear program. As long as Tehran is staying within those limits, Mr. Trump has no reason not to certify compliance. And then they go on to talk about, you know, if we don't like the way that Iran is behaving, there's a whole bunch of other things that we can do. We can get other countries to go along with us sanction them. There's other ways we can mitigate Iran's other behavior. And they continue to write, just because a country ain't perfect, that doesn't mean we don't do business with them. In the national interest, the editors write, Washington has often held its nose and dealt with aggressive or unsavory governments, among them the Soviet Union, Russia, Pakistan, and Egypt. Ms. Haley misleads further, writes the Washington Post, when she argues that it would not constitute an American withdrawal from the deal if Mr. Trump didn't certify Iranian compliance. That kind of spin will convince no one. And it won't protect Mr. Trump for being blamed for whatever follows, including outrage from France, Britain, Germany, Russia, and China, which are parties to the agreement. There are days when it seems to me that this end-time Christian worldview that is held by some of the people in the Trump administration, and I don't know for certain, but, you know, the reports that you get are that, you know, Betsy DeVos is one of these fundamentalist Christians, or at least of the We Honor Rich People sect, right? Betsy DeVos, one of these right-wing Christian pastors is now doing prayer services in the White House. I don't know if John Kelly put an end to it or not, but there, you know, you've got a bunch of fundamentalists over there, and they're informed by this revelations worldview that in the last days, God is going to punish all of us for our sins, and then the good among us will be removed from the earth because holy hell is about to descend, and Jesus is going to return after that. And, you know, the whole rapture and return of Christ and all this stuff. By the way, a theory that Christians did not subscribe to until about 200 years ago. This is a relatively recent interpretation of the Bible. And it is not embraced by Catholics. It's not embraced by most mainstream Protestant religions. It's just this fringe of fundamentalists. But they've got this idea that we live in the end times and that the end times require there to be war in the Middle East. Revelation talks about, you know, war in Israel, that the Second Temple has to be created, that there has to be such a horrible war in Israel that only 144,000 Jews are left, and that they all convert to Christianity at the end of the moment, right? This is the stuff that is being preached in Christian, in some hard right Christian churches in the United States. And this is apparently the direction that Nikki Haley is going. Is we're going to have war in the Middle East, damn it. We got to have war in the Middle East. It's time. It's time for Jesus to come back. And maybe he'll kill all those evil Muslims in the process and take out some Hindus and some Buddhists too. This is dangerous, dangerous stuff. Joe Cirincione's organization, the Plowshares organization, just put out a press release. Nikki Haley laid the Trump administration cards on the table this week with a new proposal aimed at sabotaging one of the Obama administration's most important diplomatic initiatives, writes the New York Times editorial board. Now, I was just sharing with you the Washington Post. This is the New York Times. The whole idea makes no sense to anyone but Mr. Trump's hardline advisors who see Iran as the root of evil in the Persian Gulf. The president would give Iran an excuse to revive what had been a rapidly advancing nuclear capability and confront the world with another intractable nuclear challenge in addition to North Korea. This is the Plowshares Fund that Joe Cirincione is the head of. Europeans stand by the Iran deal. They're saying no. No, thank you. Nikki Haley, stop talking like that. Yes, you're talking to, you know, a bunch of right-wingers who are funded by right-wing petrobillionaires and all this kind of stuff, but stop talking like that. Barbara Slavin for the Atlantic Council's Iran Insight blog says, appearing at a Washington think tank on Tuesday, U.N. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley laid out what appeared to be the rationale for the Trump administration to walk away from the Iran deal next month. Such a unilateral U.S. move would undercut the value of sanctions as a tool of foreign diplomacy. A tool is needed more than ever to deal with other crises, especially North Korea's escalating nuclear brinksmanship. When I look at Donald Trump gleefully ordering Patriot missile strikes on Syria while he's having dinner with the president of China, by way of saying, see, I could kill some people. When I look at Donald Trump demagoguing the issue of Iran simply because our first black president was, you know, a participant negotiating that deal. And it's become so obvious to all of us that anything that Obama did, Trump is going to try and undo. Good, bad, ugly, doesn't matter. Which is no way to run a country. It's stupid. It's a stupid way to run a country. When you look at this, you just have to, you have to conclude that this infection of our body politic by right-wing fundamentalist Christianity, the particular bizarre sect of right-wing fundamentalist Christianity that believes that we are in this generation in the last times and Jesus is going to return anytime soon, getting ready for the rapture here, folks, that group corrupting American politics and pushing us to support, in some cases, outrageous behavior by our allies, and to fight against even reasonable behavior by people that we consider our enemies. I'm speaking here specifically of Israel and Iraq, or Iran, excuse me. That strain of right-wing Christianity, I mean, this is exactly what Jefferson and Madison were worried about. A government operating on the basis of religious beliefs. You know, just this could be the thing that leads us into World War III. That's how crazy and how dangerous these people are. And I think it's a serious risk, and it's not getting anywhere close to the attention it should be getting. That these people are heading us in the direction of war. And I think Trump is gleeful of it.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information from Wall Street and Main Street, all points in between, plus the best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, show up, participate, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.